Welcome to today's COVID-19 daily update. It is great to be in Fort Smith in the River Valley. I want to thank Mayor George McGill for his invitation here for our daily update. And of course, when we do a daily update in a community, we also get together with community leaders, healthcare, but also education, colleges, and visit about the community and business leaders as to how they're handling the COVID challenges that we face today. And of course, it's very impressive what's happening in the River Valley with the resilience of people here in Fort Smith and how they've responded to this and how they're moving the economy forward, but also keeping an eye on their health and the number of cases to make sure that we are prepared for whatever the future might bring. As you know, we're not only here for the COVID-19 update, but we also had the first meeting of the task force for the future of the state of law enforcement, or to advance the state of law enforcement in Arkansas. This was born out of the protest. We have law enforcement professionals with some of the people who've expressed concern in recent days about the direction of our law enforcement and the ability to use deadly force in the right way. This task force is looking at a whole host of issues, but it was historic and meaningful that their first meeting was in this National U.S. Marshals Museum. I want to thank Patrick Weeks for his hospitality today, but it was great to be here in this venue for the first meeting of that important task force. Related to that, I did want to announce that, as you know, we have the COVID national and state emergency, public health emergency. I also had declared a 30-day emergency in terms of the civil unrest that we saw in various parts of the state, that I mobilized parts of the National Guard, had a unified command because of how we've responded to that. I am ending that emergency order early. It has subsided, and the unified command is no longer operational, and I wanted to make note of that today. That brings me to our COVID update, and I want to reference the cases that we have and then talk about our region here in Northwest Arkansas. Yesterday, we had 13,606 cumulative COVID cases in Arkansas. Today, we have an additional 322 cases. Of those 322 cases, let me just give you some news there as to some of the breakdown. Washington County had 46. Benton County had 33. Pulaski County had 23. And I know you all are waiting for Sebastian County. All the rest of them were fewer than 20 per county. Sebastian County had 6 new cases, and Crawford County had 6 new cases. And so that's good news for the River Valley, having a reduced number of new cases that are here. And I applaud that. So we now have 13,928 cases. In terms of hospitalization statewide, we have an increase of 9 that brings us to 226 hospitalizations. In terms of deaths, very sadly, we have an additional 11 deaths that brings us to 208 total deaths. Dr. Dillahay is with me today, who will be speaking in a few minutes, and she pointed out under the statistics that of those 11 new deaths, 10 were in the 65-plus age group. Now, that doesn't make us feel any better. It actually makes us feel very sad. But it is a reminder to young people that while you might survive this very well and not have any repercussions, but who are you communicating with and who you might expose, and the vulnerability of those over 65 we have to keep in mind. In terms of testing, here statewide, we had 6,654 tests, which is another strong day in test performance. And I think those are the pretty much the statistics I want to share, but I did want to go through this in graph form. I know you all have a hard time in this lighted facility, but they'll be able to see this online, the new number of cases. And this is very significant because since we had the height here of 700, then we had a number of days around 400. And I like the trend line if we can keep it up. That's a good trend line. You can see it better in the next graphic, which is a seven-day rolling average. And if I can step over here so I can see it, you can see that orange line, that the trend line is flattening out there. Now, what it will be down the road, we will wait and see, but I like that flattening out of that trend line. Next is the number of active cases. This is a very relevant statistic because active cases will lead a small percent to hospitalizations. And so we keep an eye on this. And we're at about 4,500 active cases in Arkansas that we see. And for the last couple of days, it's been steady. The next slide is the number of hospitalized. This is a concern. We're watching this very carefully. We have more than enough statewide hospital capacity, but our hospitals are treating a variety of illnesses and medical procedures that have been pent up, have been put on hold because of the COVID emphasis that we've had. And so there's a lot of work the hospitals are doing, and we're watching that capacity. We have sufficient statewide. By region, we want to watch it very carefully. The next is the positive test by date of result. This is the positive percent. The white line is, of course, the CDC guidelines for positivity. And you can see that we've been consistently in the recent couple weeks below that. And, of course, the most latest statistic is about 5%. And so even though we're testing more, that number is still very good for us. This is the cumulative total of tests. As you know, we want to make 120,000 tests, which is 4% of our population in Arkansas. This month, we're at 86,814 tests. You can see, well, that's for the month, how we increase it, obviously, every day. But if you look month by month, we've significantly increased our testing. And then this is the seven-day rolling average of new cases in the Northwest region. So now we're breaking it down by Northwest region. And I know that the River Valley would like to be in a different region than Northwest. I understand that, but that's how the public health region designates it. And here you see in the Northwest region, you also see the new cases going downward. And so hopefully that trend will continue. And we'll illustrate it again by the next slide. We're still in the Northwest region. These are those that are currently hospitalized. And we like that flat line. We hope it doesn't peak again. But it probably will. I will let you know that when you have more cases, hospitalizations will go up at some point. And this is the seven-day rolling average of new cases in Arkansas by region. It's my coat of many colors here, or my graph of many colors. But you can see the most significant thing. These are all the different public health regions. And right now, in every public health region, the latest end of the graph is going down. Every region, the trend line is going down right now. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be the same tomorrow and the next day, but that's encouraging news for us. Hopefully people are paying attention to our guidelines. In this, I just wanted to illustrate that we got a new shipment of tens of thousands of new N95 masks that came in, and so our procurement efforts continue. And now let me come back. I mentioned the current cases that we have. The active cases in Sebastian County are 187, and so you should, what we have right now is manageable. But we want to make sure that we continue to keep an eye on it. I want to recognize our members of the General Assembly that are here. You all have been very faithful in support of addressing our COVID-19 public health emergency, both by having the regular session or that you had, special session, physical session that you had, in which right in the middle of the pandemic you came and appropriated the money that was necessary to address the public health needs. And then you've also was the initiative for our executive orders in terms of liability immunity for our healthcare workers and some of our businesses. So just done a remarkable job, and thank you for being here today. Two final announcements that I wanted to make, actually just one, and that is the public health emergency. I extended it, and it's going to expire tomorrow. I'm going to be extending it for another 45 days, which is absolutely necessary to keep in place our telehealth rules, to keep in place the immunity actions that we just enacted. But I also wanted to draw attention to one paragraph of the executive order. And again, this will extend the emergency for another 45 days, but it says in paragraph 5, the Secretary of Health may issue orders of isolation and quarantine as necessary and appropriate to control the spread of COVID-19 in Arkansas. And the Secretary of Health, in consultation with the governor, shall have sole authority over all instances of quarantine, isolation, and restrictions on commerce and travel throughout the state. Cities and counties shall not impose any restriction of commerce or travel upon citizens that is more restrictive than a directive or guideline issued by the Secretary of Health in consultation with the governor. I think this is important, that we move as a state together. We know that there's going to be ups and downs in this process. I've talked to Mayor McGill, and he understands this. We're totally in link. We just did a video on making sure that the citizens know the importance of wearing a mask, protecting each other, social distancing. We have a strategy in place. We need to implement that and make sure that we stay together as a state. With that, let me recognize Dr. Dillahay, our state epidemiologist, for her additional comments.
Thank you, Governor. So I want to reiterate that we have 322 new cases today. That brings us to a total of 13,928. Currently, we have inactive cases. People who have not yet recovered are 4,344. Of those cases, 142 are nursing home residents and 644 are in correctional facilities. 3,558 are in the community. So this gives me the opportunity to reiterate, as the governor has, the importance for maintaining a 6-foot distance, wearing a cloth face covering when you cannot be 6 feet apart, good hand hygiene, and not going places unnecessarily, but to go about your business and take care of your needs. If a majority of Arkansans were to wear their cloth face coverings when they're out in public, we could greatly reduce the transmission of COVID-19 in Arkansas. But it's going to take all of us working together. It's going to take all facets of the community. Children, when they go to school or go to the university, will not be able to remain safe if their parents cannot remain safe. Their parents will not be able to remain safe if their work sites are not safe. People who reside in nursing homes will not be able to remain safe if the visitors to those nursing homes cannot remain safe. And those visitors won't be able to remain safe if their community is not safe. So that's going to take all of the facets of our communities working together and everyone doing their part to do social distancing and wearing their cloth face coverings and washing their hands often. These basic things can have a very great impact on reducing the spread of COVID-19 in our communities, and we all need to work together and do our part. Let me also use this opportunity to remind you that the reason we wear cloth face coverings is to keep ourselves, who may be infected and not yet know it, because people can spread the virus when they're asymptomatic or before they have developed symptoms, to other people. So we wear the cloth face coverings to do our part to protect our fellow citizens and all the members of our community. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Dillahay, and for everyone that's listening, I just want to say again, it's great to be in the National Marshals Museum, and behind me is the Arkansas River that you might not be able to see, but this is an incredible, beautiful venue here in Fort Smith that the whole state and nation is proud of. With that, we're happy to take any questions from the media.
Governor, I'm with iHeartMedia here in Fort Smith. I was curious about Kansas's travel restrictions issued yesterday. Did Governor Kelly give you a heads up that was coming?
No, that came as a surprise because there's not very many states that are doing that now. And it's a little bit ironic that, New York is fine to travel to, but not Kansas or back and forth to Arkansas. So that's just, I think, an aberration from what the other states are doing in handling this. But I didn't have any advance notice on that.
And speaking on traveling, we know there's a presidential rally happening in Tulsa soon. Will you be attending? Advice for Arkansans, especially in this area, who may attend that?
Well, I won't be attending. For the audience, the question is in reference to President Trump rally in Tulsa, and living in this western part of the state for many years, I understand how close Tulsa is. There'll be many Arkansans that will be looking at going there, and I think that's great. Many of the people want to support that. But if I'm going to the rally, I'm looking at are we wearing masks? I'd be wearing masks. And secondly, I'd want to make sure that there's sufficient social distancing if people aren't wearing a mask. If those criteria aren't met and you go, I would encourage you to come back and get a test taken. I think that's the right safety precaution there, but I hope that the rally will be done in a safe way. But that's, to me, a critical criteria that let's welcome the president to this part of the country, but let's make sure that we have a high regard for the public health and those requirements that we know are so important. Yes?
Mr. Governor, my name is Corey Schild. I'm a private citizen. My question is about your law enforcement task force. Now, for several years, my family has had injustices done against them with bullying in schools, assaults on my children, and just recently, because I presented a judge with Freedom of Information Act on a road that hasn't been done and was budgeted for 20 years ago, I was arrested and thrown in jail. So I'd like to know who I address on injustices done to me, my wife, and my five children.
Well, I don't know anything about the facts that you related, but whenever there is a concern about law enforcement, you can address that if it's a city police to the chief of police of the city, to the city council. You can, if it depends upon the jurisdiction, but it should be addressed in those fashions. Obviously, you should feel free to communicate to any member of the task force. It's something that we should look at from a systematic standpoint from the state.
Well, I actually have repeated recordings of said interactions.
I would encourage you to follow up in the fashion that I indicated.
Direct me in that path, sir?
I'm sure that there is. What city are you?
Right now I live back in the States, so thank you for the rural internet deal, because the satellites, they just okay. Destroying everybody around, or my friends.
I'll see if...
Mulberry and behind.
I'll see if we can't follow up and get that information for you. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes. Let's do this one, then we'll go over here.
Catherine Wilford with 5 News. Do you have any update on the poultry plants? We've heard a lot now that maybe there are cases at the Butterball plants in Madison County and in Ozark.
Well, that's not a surprise that there's going to be cases that pop up in each one of those facilities. I think the important thing is how that's responded to. And I was talking to Dr. Smith today and Dr. Delahaye that, you know, the strategy works whenever you find these cases, whether it's a poultry facility or another work environment. You immediately isolate it, you do your contact tracing, and you take the precautionary measures necessary. And whenever you do that enough times, then you're going to be reducing that and making that a very safe environment. So the poultry industry is working very hard on that across the board, and it's really not any different than, you know, whether it's a state agency or a city office. We're going to have positive cases. The question is how you deal with it, and the Department of Health, we're working with the industry, has a very good plan to address that. Yes, over here.
Hello, Jesse with KNWA. How are you?
Good.
First question, as far as wearing masks, we have the mayor of Little Rock seeking an executive order to require people wearing masks there, and then the city of Fayetteville passing its ordinance. Any plans to challenge these or to follow suit statewide?
There's not any plan to challenge any of them, but you know, everybody needs to understand that if a city rule is more restrictive than the state rule, then it's preempted by the state rule. And so it's state guidance that governs in terms of our policy on mask, on social distancing. And I encourage everybody to look closely at those guidelines as they're adopted and might be changed. And then secondly, you know, the mayors are simply sending out a signal that this is important, but their guidance should not be more restrictive than the states under the executive order.
And second question, how does testing differ between the River Valley and Northwest Arkansas, and how does that influence the River Valley's fewer numbers of cases compared to Washington County or Bend County?
In terms of the testing that's done? Well, you know, every county, of course, one, we're doing increased testing. So you look at the positivity rate. When you have positive cases, you address those. Clearly, in the River Valley, you're having fewer cases based upon that testing than we have up in Benton and Washington County. But as I've talked to the leaders here, everybody's fully aware that there could be an increase in cases here. In fact, some actually expect an increase in cases here. It's sort of the nature of this virus. It's all about how you respond to that, and there's a commitment to have the health protocols in place, plow through it, and to manage it, and also keep our economy and our schools going. And Dr. Delahaye, did you have any comment on that? If you do, feel free to grab this microphone. All right. yes, ma'am.
I'm Drew Smith with the Times Record. The hospitalizations are still on the rise, and you said that statewide our occupancy is good, but if there were stretches on the regional occupancy, would you consider cutting back on elective surgeries to compensate for that?
Well, I mean, you could consider anything, but that's not the first option at all, because people have been without these elective surgeries and procedures for months, and it's also a big part of the hospital's financial management picture. And so it's not good for the health of the hospital to cut back on that, nor is it good for the population as a whole. So that would not be something that we would look at as a first option or even a second option. We do have in each of the hospitals a surge plan. We have a statewide surge plan, so if there's any hospital that gets close to their limit on whether it's ventilators or ICU units, then we have a plan and to address that. So that's what's great about the state, and the fact that we've had a couple months to work on this, we actually are now operating as a team in terms of hospitalizations. We have that well-coordinated, and we'll be there to meet those needs. Yes, ma'am.
Looking back at the poultry plants, what more can be done to reduce the spread of the virus and protect the workers? What we've been told is that what they're doing is meeting and exceeding the guidelines set by the CDC, but the spread continues at those poultry plants. Any consideration of urging executives at Tyson or other poultry plants to shut down temporarily for X amount of time to clean or...
No, I don't think that's the solution, to shut down a plant because they have a positive case. They are critical. They're essential industries. They're part of our food supply. Nobody wants to go into a store and not have protein. So that's important. The health of the workers is very important, and that's what they're investing in, whether it's plexiglass or whether it's a distance apart or whether it's PPE, whether it's testing and contact tracing. They're doing all of that. Now, the question, though, is, well, why do we continue to have cases in the poultry industry? Well, you have to remember that each one of those workers go home. They go home, and then they go to a store. They might go somewhere else. They might go to a church gathering. And so they might then come back in and be asymptomatic, and they go to work. And so it's not just what happens in the poultry facility. It's what happens in the workers' lives. In one facility, they didn't get the virus from their work in the facility. It was on how they were transported to the facility because they were communally transported voluntarily by themselves. They went together in a van. It was a carpool. And so everybody has to watch all of those aspects of life as to not just where you're working, but how you're living. And that's why the CDC was in, to take a look more closely at some of our populations and to what better we can do to communicate with them to take the right protective measures. Yes?
I had a question for Dr. Dillahay about testing.
Dr. Dillahay.
Yes.
Yes, we've been hearing about a less invasive test for the virus that doesn't go back as far, and we've heard that it's not as effective as the normal test. Can you kind of clarify about the different types of tests and what's considered the health department uses the most to be the most effective?
Sure, that's an excellent question. So right now, the tests that we use to diagnose COVID-19 uses a technology called PCR, or polymerase chain reaction. And it looks for the actual presence of the genetic material of the virus. So if that test is positive, that means the virus is present. One of the new, less invasive tests is a blood test that tests for antibodies. And that measures the immune system's response to the virus. When a person is first infected, they don't have very many antibodies. And as they recover, then their immune system develops antibodies. So if an antibody test is positive, then that means they've potentially had the virus in the past. They have recovered from it. So it's not a useful test to make clinical decisions. You need the PCR test because you need to know right then and there whether someone has the virus. The antibody test doesn't become positive for 1 to 3 weeks after someone has already been infected, after they've recovered. So it doesn't help you with making decisions about whether this person needs to be isolated or not. The antibody tests for the virus that causes COVID-19 are still under development. Many are, several of them are available through the FDA under the emergency use authorization. And so those tests are available, but they haven't been through the rigorous testing yet to show that they really measure what we want them to measure. So it's very possible that some of these antibody tests don't really measure the virus that causes COVID-19. They may pick up on an immune response from past infections with other coronaviruses that cause the common cold. So these antibody tests may be useful in the future, but at this time they are not useful for making clinical decisions about a case or a person who may have COVID-19 right now. We really do rely on the PCR tests. So did that answer your question?
Yes, but also we've been told there's a test where you don't have to go, they barely put it in your nose and swab it, or there's one that's in your throat.
Right.
Is effective?
Right. Okay, so when the PCR test first came out, you'd have to take a swab, and it goes all the way to the back of your nose, back to the what we call the nasopharynx, the back of the throat that connects. And that's not so much fun. It's not very pleasant. And it also has the potential to aerosolize the virus if they have it, so the person collecting, the healthcare worker collecting the swab, has to wear a lot of protective personal equipment. But now they have these swabs that are the front part of the nose, a nasal swab, and a patient can collect it themselves. So a healthcare provider can watch them take it, or they can take it themselves if the patient's not able to. And it doesn't cause that kind of aerosolization that requires the PPE. We also now have some rapid tests where you can take those swabs, and it's called an Abbott ID Now, and for it can be done quickly in the clinic setting. You take the swab, put it in the machine, and in 15 minutes you have an answer. That's very helpful if you need to know about a particular patient right now. It's not very helpful if you have to test a whole bunch of people, say, in a work care setting or in a nursing home. You need to collect the swabs and take them to a lab. So that test doesn't work very well in those settings, but it works very well in an office setting if you need to know this person right now.
Thank you. Let's go. Is there a question remotely?
This is Cole.
Hi, Governor.
Bledner in Hot Springs. Dr. Cam Patterson yesterday put out a projection that's pretty dire looking at the end of September, and I'm really not asking about that. The good news is that the reality has not met the past projections. So I've had listeners this morning who said, why should we pay attention to these projections anymore? They're never right. And are you concerned that lessens the seriousness with which people face the virus?
Well, Neil, I'm not sure I got all of the question, but in terms of the UAMS projection, I get those every week. They're really, from my viewpoint, my layman's viewpoint, they're really mathematical projections based upon how the virus could spread. And really, they have a worst-case scenario and a medium-case scenario. And even the medium is very alarming, suggesting that in September 30th, we will have, I think it's over 130,000 active cases. That presumes we don't do anything in the meantime, that we just let the virus spread. Well, we're obviously not doing that. We are doing our contact tracing. We're doing our isolation. We are doing our social distancing. And so with that, it is a reminder as to how bad this could be in a worst-case scenario, but it's also really gives us goals to say we can do better than that, and we are doing better than that. Another question remotely, there was a lady I heard.
Governor Hutchinson, Jacqueline Froelich, KUAF Public Radio. Hello? Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my question. There's a petition circulating to form a state working group of cities and towns. With leadership from your office, as well as guidance from the Arkansas Department of Health, with the intent to provide jurisdictions technical assistance on COVID protections, including a model mask ordinance, which could be adopted. There's growing interest, as you all know, including reportedly by the city of Little Rock now. Comment on something like this?
I'd be happy to look at the petition. I haven't seen it. My comment in terms of of working with the cities is that, I'm happy to work with them, but they can't be passing ordinances that are more restrictive than our state guidelines. We have a state path here under our emergency order. Because we operate together, even though we have different regions, we're ultimately winding up in the same boat. Is there another question, one more question remotely?
329 News, Governor. There's a video of a Benton County JP in which he says at a Benton County Republican women's meeting last night that wearing a face mask symbolizes the intention to silence people, and then compares that to wearing a hijab or burqa. Have you seen the video, and what are your thoughts on those comments?
I haven't seen the video. All it simply reflects is that a lot of people have different views on masks. We have to preach the message that it's a public health issue, it's not a political issue. And that's as simple as it can get. And people in Arkansas, our goal is not to punish people if they don't do the right thing in terms of wearing a mask under certain circumstances. Our goal is to educate everybody, provide the information, and ask them to make good decisions. Let's come back here to the auditorium. A final question right here.
Governor, many school districts across the state are rolling out plans for virtual learning options. However, for many districts, it's still not certain what in-person classes will look like. Is there concern with many potentially taking advantage of virtual classes that could impact employment, jobs within our education system statewide? Has that been looked at yet?
Well, the question is about returning to classroom instruction and the option in some schools to do virtual learning. And the answer is, we've set out a model, Ready to Learn initiative statewide. I just visited with your superintendent here in Fort Smith. And, they have to provide options. They want to be able to start classroom instruction, but if there's a positive case or there's a need to go virtual, they have that option. And then you're going to have some students that have vulnerable health issues that might necessitate that. So we have to be flexible in this learning environment. We're giving some waivers in order to accomplish that. We're going to learn step by step as to repercussions that are and unintended consequences, but we'll learn and we'll adjust. And that's the key, is that we're going to have a school year that we have the maximum amount of flexibility with the intent to have as normal of a school year as possible that gives the students the best education possible. So they're working very hard on that. In terms of, every which way that you go, there's an impact on child care and the need for child care for workers, and that's something that we're continuing trying to incentivize to get our child care system back to the level it was pre-pandemic, because we know how important that is for our workers. Y'all have been terrific. Thank you for being here and giving us the attention, and look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.